You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net, keep the site and all of our great shows going, and get some terrific bonus content as well.
All right, so I didn't think it was possible, but I think I may have now officially seen the very first ever punk rock western. Am I right here? Like, this was a punk rock western, right, guys?
It really wanted
to be. It was a punk rock western, but it is not the kind of movie that anyone expects with that genre, and I think that's the biggest problem that this movie's going to have.
Yep. Anyways, this is Aaron, as always, and we're joined with our lovely Ben.
How's it going?
And Davey.
Hi, I disappeared for a while, but I'm back. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. It was great. We were talking before we started recording that Davey doesn't feel comfortable insulting me yet because we haven't recorded enough, and I think we might pop his insulting Aaron Cherry this time because I'm going to be all kinds of goofy. So yeah, we're talking about the true history of the Kelly Gang, which it was directed by the gentleman who did Assassin's Creed, which nobody liked, and Macbeth.
Way to throw him under the bus right away.
And Macbeth, which seemingly everyone liked, even though I have seen neither of the two. And this is ostensibly a Western, even though, like, it has none of the trappings of the American Western as we imagine it, neither in narrative. It's based in Australia on an Australian folk hero who is a controversial folk hero. And it's also filmed in a way that I actually spent the first 30 minutes of this movie questioning whether or not this was either A, in super rural, messed up, poor Australia, in the Wild West era of Australia, or even in some weird post-apocalyptic version of it. Because the visual guide to this movie is so unique. It's just its own thing.
Well, I mean, you know, colonial Australia or prison colony Australia was really its own thing. Like, Western is the closest we have to it because it's the closest that we have to the Outback. And this is based off a book, actually, of the same name, The True History of the Kelly Gang, which a lot of people consider one of the greatest novels of all time and has been called kind of jokingly that it's also the best American novel of all time because it's a great American novel because it really relates to the American West and the American culture in the same way. But it's really incredibly Australian at the same time, and I kind of love that too.
It is. It reminds me of like the Nightingale was, where it's a Western. But it basically think of something that feels like The Nightingale, but without the part of that movie where you spend 30 minutes wanting to throw yourself into the ocean afterwards.
Well, and the title is The True History of the Kelly Gang, which I feel is kind of a misnomer. I was looking it up because about halfway through I decided a better title for this movie would have been Ned Kelly, but damn you, Heath Ledger, there's already like a very traditional American Western called Ned Kelly. Because it doesn't really focus on the broader Kelly Gang as a whole in this large adventure. And it's really this really intense, introspective, in-depth dive into the mind of Ned Kelly. Like, we start with him as a small boy. I'm pretty sure finding out that his father is a crossdresser and deciding that he needs to be the man of the house. In a very fucked up, abusive, verbally gaslight-filled relationship with his mother and then his siblings until he is sold off to a traveling thief and murderer played by, wonderfully, I might add, Russell Crowe.
Oh, he's having so much fun with this.
Oh my god. His folk song about the cunty constables. Like, just, I want to hear Russell Crowe sing filthy folk songs just all the time now. They were amazing.
Can we also say his character, Harry Power, who is also another real person, might be the only good adult that he deals with in his adolescence or his teenage years at all?
And even then, like, A, not great, and B, definitely more sideburns than man, so can he even be considered an adult?
I know, like, he's the closest thing to a caring individual, and the guy teaches them how to rob and murder and castrate people. So it's like holy shit, okay. These are your role models, okay. But the movie spends about the first 20 to 30 minutes with him as a young child, and then very quickly goes, all right, he's an adult, he's in his 20s, or maybe late teens, you never know with movies of this era. And it's him coming back home after being away for a long time. And kind of the cold reception he gets with his family. His mom is getting married to a new guy from America. And he very quickly finds out that he is considered an outsider amongst his brothers, even though he was literally sold off. Like, he's treated as this person who's abandoned them. And it's very much about him coming to terms with his relationship with both his mom as well as his family and the people around him, including Nicholas Holt in a despicable turn as a nearby constable, and how they shaped this kind of warrior poet that the movie is trying to turn him into. Like, it feels like a Sid and Nancy movie via the 1800s.
I have to say, I loved Nicholas Holt in this movie. He is, like, doing, like, his perfect role being, like, smarmy but weird but kind of, like, he has a magnetic personality that even Ned can't get away from, because he, like, still likes the guy even when he's being the shittiest person to him and he knows he shouldn't trust him at all. And I'm like, I kind of get that, because I have no idea where the fuck he's coming from for, like, the first four scenes with him, and it's kind of meant to be that way.
Yeah. Well, in a movie full of...
Go on, baby.
Sorry. In a movie full of, like, pretty up-there performances, Nicholas Holt takes the movie, puts it in a little bag, throws it over his shoulder, and runs to the fucking hills with it.
Oh, yeah. Like, nobody phones it in. Even Charlie Hunnam, he plays a pretty influential character in the first section of the movie when Ned Kelly's still a kid, turns in what might be his best performance, which admittedly is not hard because he's been relatively wooden in the past, but I was really into his performance here for the brief moment that he was in it.
Like, I disagree. Russell Crowe, I really like Hunnam generally, and he's really great in The Gentleman, in my opinion.
I have not seen The Gentleman yet, or the Aztec movie he was in. So it is entirely possible that I've seen the wrong Hunnam movies. I've only seen his big, huge tentpole stuff where he's kind of, like, I always feel like he's decent, but they don't treat him right.
That's so you haven't true. Seen don't the other watch two Poppy movies Hunt. Where he's good.
Yeah, I haven't seen the ones where he actually really got to try. And I can't find her name, so I'm a terrible, terrible person at leaving this right now. But the actress who plays the Jewish girl trapped in the attic in Jojo Rabbit
is also Davis.
Thomasin McKenzie, yeah.
Thank you. Sorry.
Thomasin McKenzie. So she plays Ned Kelly's love interest.
I didn't recognize her at all in this for some reason.
It was really weird at first because she's treated as kind of a sex object in the beginning. And I was like, wow, that's an uncomfortable feeling considering the only other movie I've ever seen you in. But she is a single mom who basically is living with a family that Ned Kelly's brothers rob. And when they're introduced, they kind of hit it off and are semi-arranged. And he develops a relationship with her. Even though she has a child without a known father, which is kind of a big thing back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for the record... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Davey.
I was just going to say, first, please. In addition to what you were saying earlier, Aaron, yes, most people know Thomasin McKenzie from Jojo Rabbit. She was also in a movie called Leave No Trace, in which her character is like 14, and that was the first time I saw her in a movie, and that was 2 years ago, so it was very, very weird for me. I literally stopped the movie to Google her age to make sure I wasn't going to prison. It's very weird, and probably a bad choice.
I did too.
Yeah, I will say, we are glazing over an important thing, which is Ned Kelly himself is played by George MacKay, who most people know from his great turn in 1917 last year, which I was like, dude, it's great to see him in something else. And I feel like he's really good as this character, but this character has so many layers that you're kind of spending a lot of the time trying to piece together who he is and who he is around, also, like, outside of how fucked up his life and has been that's turned him to who he is. Because there's, like, you look at it really closely, you're like, you were actually a pretty good guy, like, you know, and your circumstances just continually said, no, fuck that, you're going to be fucked up in every way possible.
Yeah.
Well, and so I want to do more than just praise this movie. Like, I will.
Sure.
The director did an amazing job. He crafts some just jaw-dropping visuals, and the whole thing has this layered voiceover that doesn't really explain the plot ever. It's really more of explaining the inner emotions that he's going through. So you get this really close view and connection to Ned Kelly. However, aside from that, the movie I found, like, didn't really have much of an overall story once you get past really getting into who this character is. Like, the actual narrative, the plot structure, it was just like, here's a collection of scenes where we unravel more of the mystery that is Ned Kelly. And even though the movie felt like that, I, at the end of it, I don't know that I actually really... I don't know how I feel about his character in this. It's weird. This movie is almost like this tone poem. It just kind of looks at this slice of a story inside the head of this really weird out there guy. Like, did you guys have that sense? Or, like, am I the only one who didn't really get pulled into the narrative so much as just watching the moment-to-moment scenes and how it unfurled? Because, like, I had no idea what was going to happen, and nor did I really care. It was just, I'm going to just sit back and watch this.
No, I think that's... It's weird because I almost think a lot of that is intentional, and I think it's interesting coming at it from a non-Australian... from the non-Australian perspective that we have, because I feel like so much of the movie's big punch is, look how we're reinterpreting this, like, old school, everyone knows about them, like, folk hero kind of thing with this much more intimate, interpersonal, almost even a little, like, queer-coded way of looking at this character. And it loses a lot of that because we don't know, as a culture, who the fuck Ned Kelly is. And see, I think, yeah, and I think that's the biggest problem with the movie, is that we don't, is that it relies on a lot of cultural baggage that we just do not have. It is an Australian film made for an Australian audience, and if you're not in that audience, hope you like good performances.
I was going to say, I disagree on that.
Okay.
Because with the way it relates to a Western, we know this type of character. We know this guy who kind of wants to do right and gets kind of pulled down by it. You know, everything that he's doing isn't necessarily the best, but it's also not necessarily wrong in most of the cases, like, until he gets pushed too far. What's the one? God damn it. Clive Owen in a Western. Not Clive Owen. Owen. Damn it, my brain is completely dead today. Colin Farrell. There we go. That's who I'm thinking of.
Good thing.
I think it was.
It was Colin Farrell in American Outlaws, where they were the Jesse James.
Yeah, gang. Yeah. Really, like, I was thinking of, like, him in that because, yeah, you know, he's a guy who is kind of that a very similar story to Ned Kelly, and that's like, he wasn't necessarily a bad guy the whole time, but, you know, after the Civil War, he just kind of rolled into some of the wrong stuff and then basically saw terrible things going on around him and just was like, well, you know, there's nothing I can do about it just by trying to be peaceful. I got to do what I'm good at. And he did help support local towns and all that, which Ned Kelly did too. This movie glazes over a lot of that Robin Hood stuff that he did, which I think is a bit to its disservice, and that's kind of where I have the fault with it. I admittedly have not read the books, but I kind of knew General Ned Kelly lore, and the book, and I knew a lot of his lore, and it's like, I knew him as, like, that robber baron kind of, like, you know, Jesse James and all of that, and, you know, doing that type of, you know, work to help the people while also trying to fight, you know, an oppressive side, like, that's stuff that I felt was missing. I will also say I read up the stuff on the book that was different, and the stuff, like, the book has more time with Harry Power, which I think would have been so good with Russell Crowe to get more of that, even though we're not getting to our actual lead actor there. And they also say that the actual gunfight in the book is all three of them actually in the metal armor, which would have been really cool. Like, it's a very stylized final gunfight, but I didn't personally think it was that as engaging. It was trying to be kind of like how he would have written it if he was experiencing it, which clearly he didn't write that segment.
Well, and I agree that I feel like there is a more traditional plot under this movie. Like, you could have made this movie very easily and taken out some of the extreme style and turned this into a crowd-pleasing three-act Western. And instead, the director seems to have intentionally made this movie a little more, I don't want to say off-putting, but like holding people at a distance. You have to work to really get into this movie story. And if you can, there's a lot there. Like, even that final gunfight, if you look at it in the context of, is this an exciting action piece? No, the answer is it's not. But it's also not really trying to be. It's kind of a representation of the main character starting to lose his grip on reality. And they shoot it in this really weird way where they have a bunch of the opposing force wearing those outfits that are designed to fight paparazzi, where when there's a flash, they glow white and cut out any visibility into the people who are wearing them. And so there's just this crowd of people like that. And so, like, it's visually interesting. It's just not a climactic action set piece. It's more about what's going on inside his head, which is why I keep coming back to the fact that I think this movie was titled wrong. Like, I went into this expecting kind of what Ben is talking about, where we're watching this game, we get some of the Robin Hood parts, we get more about their interplay and really what's going on. I can't tell you a single name of any of the gang members. Like, they show up, it's really just the last third of the movie where they really form the Ned Kelly game. And so, like, this feels like an artsy Western is what he really wanted to do. And I can't dislike it because it does it so well.
But I will say
it's also Sorry, continue. I was spinning out.
They're good. I just want to say the book itself is not literally just about the gang. It is the story told here. It is every bit of this, some different, you know, and some stretched out more for the novel, which is 400 pages and is like 18 sections as written by Ned Kelly, like this movie has with the narration, which I think is great. But like, yeah, no, it's named that because that's what, you know, Ned would name it as he's writing this, you know, novel pretty much about his life as he's on the run, which I think is great to transfer to the movie from the book as well. Again, I still really want to read the book now, actually, especially after this. But I will say, yeah, it's not meant to be like about that. I guess for better marketing, they could have changed the name, but it fits better narratively for it to be called that. One thing I did want to point out that they say, according to Wikipedia, in the book is that the school teacher at the end there, Thomas Kernow, who, you know, basically is the one who gets the book, does not actually present the book the way it's presented at the end of the movie, which I thought was great the way it's presented at the end. But I also like the way that they tell it here, which is that he actually was like, this was the best thing I had. And like, this is my reward for this, and this is all I get out of it, and I feel torn about what I did. Whereas in the movie, the ending is pretty much like, and this is how bad colonials are, where the British come back to Australia, and they basically still say, look, this is the best we have for a hero. Isn't that sad?
You know, Ben, why don't you go ahead and just barrel right into your final thoughts?
Sure, yeah. As I said, I kind of knew some stuff about Ned Kelly going into this. I found the movie just really engaging. Like, it has its pacing issues sometimes. It has things you kind of wish it would stay with more. Like, we really don't get a lot with Russell Crowe, but when he's there, he's great. Charlie Hunnam does a great job, but he really is the first half. I kind of wanted to come up in for his character at some point that we never really get. But overall, I really love the movie. I love the punk rock vibe he tries to put in there. I wish there was more of that, actually, because when it comes in, like, with that energy, it really spices it up and like fits this character. But you can't, you know, they couldn't have done it the whole way through, I don't think, but it feels imbalanced because of that. Overall though, I really am going to recommend this movie because I had a really great time with it. It was It was a lot of what I hoped for, and, you know, I'll say a lot for some Screener Squad things. Just watch it alone for Nicholas Holt chewing scenery and being the worst bad guy of, like, the year. I really adored that.
God. He does a thing in the movie, which it instantly made me go, you know, I really hope he dies. And it's rare that a character or an actor is able to, like, make me actually want the character to die. And so I can't sell enough how good he is in this. Davey, why don't you go next?
Wait, I didn't give a score.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. What's your score?
I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 severed penises.
Oh, God. There you go.
Awful. Awful.
You're welcome, America.
You're welcome, Australia. This is a weird movie because there's Justin Kurzel makes zero decisions that I think are wrong, but there are a lot of things where I just kind of look at it and go, I would have done that differently, but I can't be mad that you did it the way you did. It's a very interesting film, and there are a lot of things about it that are really gripping and that I will keep thinking about for a very long time, but it's not very emotionally, it doesn't emotionally connect with me very much, which is fine when a movie is this stylized and this well acted and this well put together. But there are just a few things about it that I feel kind of put a little bit of a barrier up between me and the movie so that it can be so artsy and so stylized and so much of, like what you're saying, like a tone poem. So is that a criticism or is that just me being difficult? I don't really know. I liked watching this movie, and I will be thinking about it for a very long time. Nicholas Holt should get an Oscar nomination, because who is he going to run against this year?
I mean, he has a good shot, in my opinion, from this one, too.
Oh, absolutely. It's a very, again, to bring back The Nightingale from last year, it's like a more fun version of Sam Claflin's performance in that film. And I feel like the whole movie can be described as something like The Nightingale, but fun, which sounds wrong, and probably is, but if that's the kind of thing that maybe doesn't interest you, but makes you go, alright, I'm curious as to what sort of mangled, horrific thing that will turn out to be, there are worse ways to spend 2 hours. I feel like I'm underselling it. I do like this movie, I just think there is that barrier between the movie and me that I can't fully parse out. So I'm going to give True History of the Kelly Gang 7.5 out of 10 Constable Cunts.
God damn you. So that was exactly what I was going to do. I've been sitting here so proud about coming up with that. I was like, no, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it.
Yeah, I don't have shame. I'll take it from you.
1 point of clarification. I'm pretty sure there's less rape in this than in Nightingale.
Oh, much less.
So if that is a trigger point for you, don't worry about that with the comparisons that are being made.
That's why it's more fun, because there's less of horrific, brutal sexual assault. You know, fun.
So, like, when I watch this movie, whenever I watch these movies and we do the review here, I try to think of it from two points of view. There's my point of view of whether or not I liked it, and then there's the point of view of your average audience member. I think your average audience member is going to struggle with this movie because it is very stylized. However, it really worked for me. I thoroughly enjoyed the style. This feels like a more accessible, quicker paced Nicholas Winding Refn movie the movie very much will stop and go, all right, we're going to be stylist as shit for the next 5 minutes and you're just going to put up with it because it's beautiful and it sells a feeling. But it never gets as slow and bogged down in its own kind of message the way Refn movies tend to. The color is amazing. The cinematography in this is jaw-dropping. There are some truly just mind-blowing scenes that this director has managed to put together. They just don't tell a traditional story or any kind of a traditional narrative. This very much is, like we've been saying, it's a tone poem from the point of view of this not necessarily unreliable narrator, but kind of out there guy. Having said that, though, like, if you're into overly stylized, really interesting, kind of weird cinema, this is going to be your jam. It is a great, odd Western that does some things that surprised me that I haven't seen before, and I don't say that often. As much as I do say go into this a little trepidatiously, unless it's your jam, I'm going to give this, well, now that you stole my thing, 8 out of 10 badass men in dresses.
Hell yeah.
That's fair.
Hell yeah. You know, if people think you're scary, they'll mess with you. But if people think you're crazy, they won't.
That's why I carry a sword. If I ever get mugged, I'm just going to slice my chest and say, "The prophecy has come true."